This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with ShareePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to the Twin Peaks Investing Podcast. My name is Peter Higgins, and today we're here with Wheelie Dealer on Twitter, and we are also here with Vonnie at Vonnie_Leah, our special guest for the day. So I think I'll start with introducing Vonnie, and then we'll start with checking out up on Pete. What do we have here? We have a lady who is not only a mum of two, a hardworking voiceover lady, former model, lived around the world in various different parts of the world. But she's also a lady that likes her stocks, her dividend portfolio, robo investment accounts, crypto, you name it. Vonnie's having a little dabble in all of it. And she started her financial journey via cryptos in 2017. And as she's written to me here, serendipitously met an options trader in 2019 and then had the misfortune of stumbling upon Wheelie Dealer and I in 2019. And it's all been downhill ever since. Bonnie, welcome to Twin Peaks, mate. How are you doing?
I'm all right. Thank you for having me. It's really weird to hear you like summarize that, because that journey's been crazy. And you know, I'm definitely not who I was in 2017 on this investment journey. But to hear you summarize it, it's like it just went in a blink. And it has actually, it has gone in a blink. And it's a privilege to be here talking to you two, because you're part of that journey as well. So thank you for having me.
No, I mean, that's fantastic. I mean, I've met you, you know, physically at the Wheelie Bash, I think, wasn't it? You came down to Windsor, which was great, and it's fantastic to have you on here, because I think it'll bring something different to the podcast, because we quite often have really experienced investors and whatever. It's really great to get someone who's been in it a few years and to get a perspective of someone who doesn't have that, you know, really long experience. But I think a lot of our listeners will be able to relate to that.
I mean, I know that, I mean, I did smile when you said, you know, I got into crypto, I like robo investing, I like my income portfolio. I also have a small portfolio, which is like high growth, high spec kind of assets. And then I think to myself, gosh, am I eclectic and diverse because that's the way I am? Or am I doing it because I'm so inexperienced that I'd rather just spread my risk everywhere? But actually, when I look at my returns over the last 5 years, it has increased. I'm getting better at it. So, you know, probably a few years ago, I would have probably said, oh yeah, it's because I can't make any decisions, I don't know where to put the money. Actually, when I think about my personality, I am a little bit eclectic in that way. And there is a mix of, you know, like culturally, I have a mix of European, Asian, you know, there's mixes there. And it kind of does reflect in my portfolio, because I do invest stateside in Europe and over in Asia as well. So I'm not kind of afraid to go and have a look at what Hong Kong's up to, what China's up to. I wouldn't say I have the most amount of patience to read through RNSs and, you know, or I still really struggle with it, because I know do your own research. But sometimes I just think to myself, just a gut feeling of a product or a company that I'm consuming, like say when I'm over there on holiday, I'm thinking to myself, hey, I can see this like automated self-driving vehicles driving around these Hong Kong grids, and people hopping on and off, you know, buying stuff in these humanless environments. I'm thinking, I quite like the look of that. Do I particularly, you know, get in there and read about, you know, all their profits and you know, cash flows. Sometimes I don't. Sometimes I think I just like the look of it. I can visibly see that there's expansion here. I'm just going to, you know, dip my toe in. A little bit risky, I guess, but that's just...
Well, funny, I don't see any problems with that. If you look back at some of the most famous fund managers, right, and we're including Warren Buffett in there, in the sense of it's not a fund management company per se, it's an investment company. But he often talks about the likes of Coca-Cola, Pepsi, Walmart, you know, and he's bought into those products. You know, the last and the best investment he's ever made is Apple, you know. Mm-hmm. So those are products. Gillette is a product, you know. So if you are seeing something and you can actually tangibly see it and, you know, like the product and it's a listed entity, you know, why not investigate that further and then decide, actually, I think this investment, this company or this product could be around for a long, 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 long time, you know. So why not? You know, if you'd got into Colgate Palmolive, for instance, years and years and years ago, when people saying Colgate's the best toothpaste, I'm sure that would have turned out to be a very, very good investment over the last 15, 25, 30 years. So there's nothing wrong with that. And a lot of Asian products end up in the UK and America anyway. So if you're one of the first investors in that particular company, if it's listed overseas and the American market embraces it, oh my gosh, the revenues and the profits and the what would happen to that share price could be absolutely huge. So it's not the only way to do it, but it's a good way of doing it. And it's worked phenomenally well for people that are able to invest extremely long term.
I think the idea of using, what they call it, scuttlebutt, don't they? Or just observations. Was it Peter Lynch used to talk about scuttlebutt? And I think I think that's really useful, and I certainly do it myself. I mean, I've got shares in Hotel Chocolate, HOTC, and I first came across that product because I was given a box of them as a gift when I was in hospital 22, 23 years ago. That's how I first sort of found out about the product. The thing I would say is that when I discover companies like that, it is still very much for me that I need to look at the valuation and see that the business case stacks up. If it's a great potential business, but I can see the valuation's bonkers, and we've been definitely going through that, you know, with the big tech sell-off recently. So many things, people were looking at Peloton bikes. Everyone's got a Peloton bike, so I must buy the shares. You can't just do that without having an understanding of the valuation or having a trading strategy that will get you out if you've got in too early or got it wrong or whatever.
You've really hit the nail on the head there, Pete, because I find where I really fall short is both of you actually hit two nails on the head. Firstly, understanding the valuation, and secondly, having that really long-term view, because sometimes when you're in it too early, for example, I've been in NIO, N-I-O, which is a Chinese EV company, which hasn't reached Europe yet, but there are plans to, and they have European headquarters. I've been in it 3-4 years, and I'm like, I'm getting bored watching this go up, watching this thing, you know, when is it going to hit 20? But I know it's a 10-year, 15-year, 20-year product, but I don't have experience in the market to understand the reward for a 10, 15, 20-year investment. Theoretically, I know it's there, but because I've not been in it and I'm watching it go, 32, right, back down to 8, and I'm like, oh my God, do I even know what I'm doing? So there's like all these aspects and all these cogs that's constantly moving. But fundamentally, I think you're absolutely right. It always, and I have noticed this, especially since the March 2020 downturn, and then watching what's happened this quarter this year, valuation matters eventually.
Yeah, I think that.
Sorry, the real important thing here, Vonnie, and we need to talk about this a bit more going back regarding all the different works you do and different parts of the world that you actually get to. The important thing to look at is, are the revenues growing? Because there was a time when absolutely got smashed. Amazon was like written off to the point where Jeff Bezos had to write a letter to shareholders to say, look, we're still growing revenues. Once this is over, we will be fine. And since then, obviously, it's gone to where it's gone, into the stratosphere as a company. Now, not every company is going to end up being the next Amazon, But if your company that you've invested in, Neo, is going to be one of those companies, you need to be looking at, are the revenues still growing? Is the company and the management still confident regarding what they're doing? Do they need debt? Are they building up debt? Are they diluting everyone every 3 to 6 months or 3 years regarding, you know, placings and raising more money? If they're not doing any of that, and they're actually doing R&D, investing wise, and actually generating revenue, they will be fine. And the biggest profits and biggest returns you'll ever make will be accumulatively over 5, 10, 15, and 20 years. And I'll be talking about a stock which has done that for me a bit later on as to why I've decided to do something else with it now. But that's the patience of it. You know, you've got two youngsters now, right? You've seen them nurture from little toddlers, right, to now telling you, almost behaving like your mini bosses, and you're going, oh my gosh, this kid's only 14 and he's telling me what to do. So that's almost like an extension of your family. These stocks now are behaving erratically like little teenagers, and at some point or other they'll become grown-ups and profitable companies, and you'll look at your portfolio and think, oh my gosh, I'm so pleased I kept that additional weighting in that particular stock now, because it's benefited me. You know, when the story changes and the company starts to deviate from their plan, or things start to go wrong, or things start to go awry, or the metrics they said they were going to achieve in 2020 still haven't arrived in 2022 or 23, that could be a time to go, maybe they're not quite who they claim to be.
Bonnie, is Neo the one that you drive your car into, like, a sort of garage thing, and it swaps the battery
That's
over.
Right. Yeah, so their technology is different from something like a Tesla. So yeah, they're investing in the actual battery swapping instead. So there are lots of challenges anyway in terms of, you know, sourcing enough lithium to get the prices down, and et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, that we're talking about actually providing them with actual stations to change the battery. So, you know, who wins in the end, hence why it's in my speculative growth account, which is,
they started doing it with little bikes as well, haven't they? You know, overseas. So, yeah, but yeah, patience, Vaughn.
Yeah, and I think I do like to compartmentalize, and I did say kind of offline, I try to keep these portfolios, and I don't know whether it's just me or whether you guys do this as well, I actually keep them on different platforms, because I feel like it really compartmentalizes what I'm trying to do.
I like that.
Well, I don't know. For me, it really works, because if I kept my kind of dividend income portfolio in the same one as my high spec growth, and it's kind of that same basket, I find it really difficult to, you know, remove the amount or whatever, do the calculations and think, okay, my high spec stuff is, I don't know, return me whatever, although it's a much smaller part of the entire portfolio. And then my div is, paying me X percentage every month, every year, every quarter, whatever. I find it really hard to work it out. Whereas if I just have it from completely separate platforms, I get the, Excel spreadsheets off it. And I think, okay, I understand what's going on over there. You know, don't fiddle about with that, because that's giving me whatever. And then, you know, this side, it's not going so well, but that's that part. And I just find it so much easier when I'm trying to manage, I guess, my eclectic investing style. Plus I trade. I do day trade and swing trade as well. That I just feel like it's just so much better spread across different platforms. And it doesn't make any difference, really. I mean, unless, you know, you're always watching feeds and...
an interesting point here, because I know you do multiple different jobs and different roles. Do you compartmentalize all of those different roles in what you're doing?
Yeah.
And the voiceover work, the TV work, the modeling work, and all the rest of it. Do you have to put them all in different boxes?
I do.
And that enables you to actually function and plan and organize. And that's, and you're just replicating that regarding your investing. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. As long as you collate all of the different metrics when you're doing all your different returns for, you know, for your profitability regarding your portfolio and possible tax returns as well, if it comes to that.
Yeah, I mean, when you kind of begin, I remember when I first, just heard of crypto, really, And I probably got in at the peak. You know, I did all right, but it, you know, I didn't make my millions from it. But I remember thinking, oh man, you need money for this. You need money for this. And that was at the beginning, 2017, 2016, where fractional shares became more available. And I hadn't heard of it because the only people that I knew that could buy shares were rich people. You know, people, that's it. You know, what is a rich person? No idea. It wasn't me. That's all I knew. So when I heard about fractional shares, do you know what I mean? They're like, well, what is a rich person? What? Well, it ain't me. But when I heard of fractional shares, I thought, oh man, I can buy a bit of something that I like and then just see what happens. Because at the end of the day, you know, if someone is hesitant in taking that step and they're listening to this and thinking, you know, what's my 50 quid going to do? What's my £500 going to do? You know, your £500 may be £500 now, but your percentage gain is still a percentage gain of that amount of money. So if you gain 10%, it's still 10%, whether it's £500, £5,000, £50,000. And I think if you start off your journey in that way, where you're not looking at the nominal value, you're looking at your percentage value, it, for me anyway, it just set me up with the right mindset to not feel so small. Because sometimes that feeling of I'm so small makes you stop learning. I mean, I don't know whether you guys ever felt that, whether you guys started and just thought, you know what, I know what I'm doing, I've got money, blah, blah, blah. But I started off feeling completely insignificant, completely unworthy of even buying part of a share. But then when I started to see the percentage change, and I thought to myself, hang on a minute, who cares if it's 2% of £50 or 2% of £500? I've still made 2% that I didn't have before. And then that 2% became 6, that 6 became 12, that 12 turned into 20, now it's 37. Do you know what I mean? It's like as the years go on, but when I began, I felt tiny. I felt so minute that I almost didn't start. I almost didn't begin.
I think for me, when I started at completely the wrong time, is I started pretty much at the top of the dot-com boom in late 1999, early 2000, completely the wrong time. And of course, at that time, it was so easy to make money because you could literally buy anything and it just went up. And everybody was into shares and it was like, you can't go wrong. And I was massively overconfident. And I was convinced I knew what I was doing. The only good decision I made, with something you've done already, Bonnie, was to diversify. And that saved my backside. But like when the markets crashed down to 2003, I probably lost. I mean, to be honest, I didn't want to look. I probably lost 50% of my portfolio. It was absolute carnage. But the thing was, I then got the feeling that you had initially. I started then to think, oh my God, maybe I can't do this, you know, and started to doubt what I before assumed that I could do no problem. But that was good because it forced me to learn about things like Warren Buffett, to read loads of investing books like Peter Lynch, to get into like Naked Trader, Robbie Burns, and just start to learn. And I took it as it was like a sort of kick in the teeth from the market, but the right lesson to get from it was to, well, okay, this isn't easy. You've got to work at it.
Yeah, I call it tuition fees. I'm like,
Yeah.
Market, right.
Cost of entry.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny because you've just described what is for me 2021. You could buy anything.
Yeah.
I bought anything. Just like, woohoo. You know, and now. But do you know what is so important? It's because of podcasts like this and what work you do that really kind of raises the flag. Because I think if I hadn't found FinTwit and I hadn't found the two of you, I wouldn't have had that flag raised, because I would have been in that mindset thinking I can buy anything and it'd be fine. And it wasn't until I read your blog, Pete, that I really thought to myself, oh, okay, so, you know, perhaps there is something to do. I never used to hedge really, because I didn't really understand shorting and, you know, you buy, you go long, you win. But then I started to think, okay, you know, valuations are looking crazy in America. I don't trade the US indices that often. But in November 2021, I just kept thinking, this is insane valuations. You know, everything that was holding up the S&P 500 were up there in the hundreds of PEs, which in my little knowledge knew that that was too high. It was unsustainable. And like everything, it had to come down. So I placed my first short back then on the S&P 500 and did quite well in terms of timing it. And that's when I'd really started to understand that there isn't an easy path, that there's lots of tuition fees to pay along the way. Rolls-Royce is a really good example, because it's only really now, what, 3 years in from the pandemic, that it's really started to recover. And I had been watching it since it diluted, since it completely tanked. And then I think it was it last week that Boris had announced in the news that they were looking into investing in more nuclear energy, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So I was watching that piece of news and I thought to myself, oh, well, I know what R&R, Rolls-Royce R.L are up to in terms of nuclear, because it's just a company that I've always been quite interested in. Let me dip my toe in now that I can see this, you know, there's going to be some infrastructure investment into it. So that's kind of, I don't know. Sometimes I feel like I'm doing like really basic things, because I don't go in and read lots of RNSs and, you know, company information first. I do just kind of get a feel for things and think, oh, God, I kind of like the look of that. Where it's going to go in the next few years, I don't know. But
sometimes it's important to keep things simple, and I reference this quite a lot. And I sometimes overcomplicate things by trying to research things to the nth degree. I think the important thing is that if you're familiar with the company, and Pete and I talk about this quite often here, about this bank of knowledge that you've got over years of, you know, picking up a little bit of that and a little bit of that and a little bit of this regarding Rolls-Royce, enables you to be like, aha, and you join the dots almost immediately, because you've heard one thing being said, Boris nuclear, you've straight away gone ping, Rolls-Royce, let me have a look at what Rolls-Royce is doing right now. Mm. You know, the shares got absolutely smashed, as you say, a massive dilutive placing and fundraise. And they went up and almost doubled within that time that they did that fundraise. And the shares have come all the way back down again. Now, if you're buying it around this sort of time, irrespective of us going into a recession, maybe in the next 6 months or next year and a half, and you're looking at 3, 4, 5 years outside of this time frame, then who knows where Rolls-Royce will be regarding all their other niches that they're in, as well as nuclear. So it's not a bad idea to go and investigate further regarding Rolls-Royce. There might be opportunities there. I see Pete's got his handy phone out. He's going to be telling you the metrics on Rolls-Royce. Are you looking at the metrics on Rolls-Royce, Pete?
Well, what I did look at very quickly was a chart. And looking at the three-year chart, I always have to think about this. It's sort of done the drop, and now it seems to be in that sort of sideways rehab phase. And I think it's going through that at the moment. So until it really breaks out to the upside, which in the current environment with everything going on is probably going to take a while, but who knows? And once it does break out, that's the time to buy more, I tend to find. I love the simplicity thing. I think, you know, you were talking just now, Pete, about, you know, doing all the research and all the rest of it. I am more and more moving to the view that there's probably 4 or 5 key factors that drive a share price. And you can spend days and days and weeks researching a company when really it's those 5 things that matter. And it's things like, what's the valuation, whether it's in an uptrend, are brokers upgrading the forecasts? Does it pay a dividend or whatever? Is it a decent dividend? Has it got a strong balance sheet? Whatever it is. But I think there's just these key things that matter. And I think a lot of the time we just overcomplicate things.
Mm.
I'm for overcomplicating things, mate. Yeah. And I'm going to change that habit going forward, no doubt, because I want to spend less time researching and reading. I don't, well, not reading per se. I enjoy reading, but I think the research aspect of it, you can spend a lot of hours and end up with nothing. So there is that cost regarding your time. And unlike Vonnie and, you know, many others on Twitter, I'm not getting any younger, you know, so I want to spend my time doing things I enjoy, and spending time with people I love, and, you know, have a bit of banter and a bit of fun and go on holidays more, you know, so that's the plan, you know. So, Vonnie, I want you to go back, if I may, because people want to know a little bit more about your background in a sense of journey from Malaysia, London to Leicestershire, and all the other things in between, all the different things that you've done and how that's made you the whole person that you are.
I have lived in a lot of places and, you know, different areas of same places as well. So I've seen a lot of things, I guess, and I'm a consumer at the end of the day. And I'm also very interested in, like, what's happening, you know, what's happening in this particular area, what are the challenges, you know, what people going through, same with countries. I think I have this natural curiosity with, you know, in terms of politics, economics, just very baseline stuff, you know, nothing going in too deep. And I think it's that variety that's made me this kind of like melting pot of, I guess, I suppose with that pot, I like to think, what's happening in the next 20 years with the world? You know, we've got a food scarcity problem because of an overpopulation issue, plus we are kind of running out of arable land, and then there's this whole, you know, carbon emissions neutrality that everyone seems to be wanting to tackle because of climate change. So I'm constantly like thinking about these things and thinking, who's doing anything to help? And then whoever I find is doing to help, I do have this natural curiosity to kind of reach out and be like, oh, hey, you know, just reaching out to someone really interested in what's going on here. And I think that really does feed into what I like to speculate on. You know, we'll see if I'm wrong or right. But I think it's less about wrong or right. It's more, if you can find it interesting enough to keep learning about it, I think it's irrelevant if you're wrong or right, because you'll eventually be led down sectors and paths that you enjoy knowing about. And sometimes I've gone wrong reading about stuff that I just don't care about. And I'm thinking, kind of like what you said, Pete, you know, it's in an uptrend, it's broken out, it's had good valuation, but I find it so uninteresting that I don't care what it's doing.
Like, yeah,
I don't care. Yeah. It's not in a sector that I like. I don't understand it. I don't. Peloton is quite a good example, actually. It's just something that I'm like, I haven't got a clue. I don't know. People riding on their bikes at home. I don't know. I like going out to meet people. I'm a people person. I don't care what it's doing. You know, when it was basically going up, and then when it tanked, I didn't care either. So it wasn't like I didn't see it as an opportunity to take a trade. You know, even if I didn't want to invest in it, I wasn't even interested in trading it because I had no interest in the thing itself.
Okay, well, let me switch this up a little bit then. So you mentioned Peloton twice now, and then we had the other one, which I thought would have been of interest to you. We had the Beyond Meat one, which just went out of the traps and just went whoosh. I forget how far it went, but that's come down because of your different views on healthy living and food. Did that pique an interest in you at all?
No, not really. Yes, it's funny because consumer staples and kind of more day-to-day consumer, you know, actually, I've only just gotten into groceries, actually, because I was always a tech person. So I like things to do with space, biotech, vertical farming. So farming and hydroponics, they were really kind of massive interest to me, digital currencies, you know, understanding what's happening with clean energy mining, emerging markets as well. So it didn't naturally, but then I have started to look, you know, especially now we're talking about perhaps going into recession, I've started to think about, okay, you know, my tech stuff is very interesting, but I think now that we perhaps are talking of a recession, I need to start looking at things that people are going to be spending on. I mean, infrastructure is also something I'm very interested in, because I don't think that will slow down. People may be a bit more picky about what infrastructure that they invest in.
Yeah, what sort of infrastructure are you particularly thinking?
I really like the whole utilities and energy sector with infrastructure.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because I just think the demand will always be there whilst we're the way we are. So I do like to look at that kind of sector.
Are there any stocks that you can think of?
So an American one is AMT. Let me just have a quick look on my list. So I like AMT. I've recently bought some FSFL.
Oh yeah, Foresight Solar, yeah.
And some, this is the European one, KIE, KIE.L.
Kia as in the construction company.
Just a lot of kind of movement in the background that I just quite like the look of, and yeah.
AMT is American Tower, apparently. I've never heard of it. I've no idea what it is.
So they
this
basically,
is a quick hello to you, our valued reach, Twin Peaks investing podcast reach, listener. Whatever channel you're okay. listening to, please make sure
but
to subscribe.
They basically
and you'll always
rent
be
out.
The first
I'm
to get
a really
episodes.
Interesting book, actually, called
Thank
Rentiers,
you for your continued support.
Rentiers Economy. So basically, they're renting out utilities space.
Yeah.
Satellites and everything else, which we're always going to need, and even more so with that kind of tech. So I do like that side of things. But then I also understand I don't know everything about it. So I have started to kind of start to look at things that I do understand. And I'm really liking where grocers are at the moment. People like Tesco, Walmart, who was the other one? Oh, I tell you who absolutely tanked today. BME.
Yeah, we had a bad bit of news, and also Walmart tanked a few days back as well.
Yeah,
because of they said there's consumers are reining in their spending, so the retailers could be impacted regarding interest rates and inflation, curtailing how much consumers can spend. So it's a space to watch. But going back to the other space you talked about regarding renewables and infrastructure, the one that I'm going to disclose here now that I've got is a company called JLEN Environment Mental Assets Group, JLEN. So that renewable space is something that I've been attracted to. I think given where we're going with the energy crisis and the fact that we're now going to have to pump so much money into that space to address it, I think renewables and those that are almost inflation linked regarding what they're doing going forward could be a really good spot to be in. It's not going to generate loads and loads of returns, but it's not going to get hammered when lots of other consumer led sort of stocks get picked off going forward. We've mentioned it on here numerous times. I think anything that's to do with retail that's got large costs, capex costs, employee costs, energy costs, logistic costs are going to get absolutely creamed going forward, unless they've edged some of those costs out. So, you know, we've seen what's happened to Ocado. Remember when everyone was living up on Ocado and the shares were, I don't know, did they get to £20 per share? I think I saw them today at sub £8. I was like, whoa. Yeah. What's gone on there? You know, and Marks and Spencer's invested a load of money into them and bought, you know, situation with Ocado. So it's not looking good for Ocado at the minute. I'm not sure how low that can go.
Surely everybody will always need groceries, right? I mean,
Absolutely.
I would find it surprising if they all went to zero.
They won't go to zero. No, of course they won't. I mean, Pete was talking on the last podcast about buying Tesco's as an income stock. You know, I'm not sure how the shares have done since last week, 2 weeks ago, but Tesco's is not going to go out of business. Walmart's not going to go out of business. It's just that right now and going forward, investors are going to become more and more short-termist and more fickle. You know, any bit of news that's not we're up and we're ahead is going to get hit. You know, you've got to exceed expectations. And even then, sometimes the shares get hit. You know what I mean? So
well, when I got
and in the recession, everything gets sold off.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, when I got pinged today about this BME, I just had a quick look and thinking, oh my God, what's happened? Because like just 5% down suddenly is like sub £5 now. And it was because of their, one of the owners wanting to retire or selling off his shares or whatever. And I'm thinking, well, that's not that was. It's bad news in terms of, obviously it's a big sell, but it's not bad news in terms of the actual business model. You come to where I live, B&M is rammed. You know, everyone's shopping there because of their price point. And I'm thinking, well, let's look at it even further. You know, they've got a 9% div. That's quite sweet, really.
Yeah, assuming that dividend continues.
Which
I would think, put it this way, even if the dividend got cut, you're probably still going to get 4% or 5%. So there's a certain amount of downside protection if you were to invest in BME and it was to go wrong. Mm. But if it doesn't go wrong, you're picking up a massive dividend. And sooner or later, that dividend yield's going to reduce simply by the share price rising. So, you know, it's very much a value retailer. I think value retail is going to do really well in the next few years.
I just think if the business is still sound, and really the only reason why it tanked was because of, you know, one of the owners wanting to retire and sell his part of the shares. I think this is still a family-owned business, I think. I can't remember what the percentage is. I don't know. It was just something that got pinged to me today. And I thought, oh, what's going on here? So I basically set alerts that tell me any kind of like big movements, and it can be in anything. It's like something's moved 10%. It's like, just why? You know, I'm just curious. I don't invest in everything because, you know, you can't watch everything. But it's just nice to know, just to take today as an example, when you get a sea of red, both here and over stateside, if you get pinged something that's green and it's green, significantly green, I like to know what sector it's in. Because I think, well, 70% of the market is red, and then this thing gaps up 5-6% because I've set my, you know, my alert. I'm just curious what's going up when everything's going down, you know. And like, I do
like that. I like that, Bonnie. I haven't got alerts like that to tell me those sort of things, but I think that's a really, really good idea. And I think the idea of looking at the sectors that are holding up and showing a bit of strength is quite shrewd, because it enables you to go, actually, let me have a look at what else is in this sector. What else is in this side of the market? And anything, and I've said this before on here, anything that's doing well over a period, we've had now 3 or 4 weeks of pure volatility, probably since the end of February, end of March, where lots of the market's been sold off. Anything that you can do filters on that's showing strength in that over those past 2-3 months, those are the areas to be looking at and investigating further. Because if everything's selling off and this is holding up, why? And is it possible that there's something in that sector that still hasn't caught up to the peers? You know?
And
so, yeah, definitely a good idea.
And something I read or heard, and I can't remember who to reference it, is that whenever people think, and, you know, there's that fear and greed index, isn't there, where there's extreme fear and extreme greed. Whenever people get to that extreme fear, or not people, but the indication goes to that extreme fear, and people always think, oh my God, it's the end of capitalism. When you go back the 100 years, 150 years, it's never the end of capitalism. Never. Yeah. So it's always
I think that was John Stepek on the Investing Matters podcast I've just recorded.
Yes, it might be.
Yes.
Because I listened to you there as well. Yeah, and I was in the car, and I really thought to myself, do you know what? You're so right, because people thought that in March 2020, you know, we had a dip in 2008. And then obviously, you know, you go back, and every single time it was the same as the end of capitalism. And it just proved that actually it was the best buying opportunity. It's just knowing.
I do most of my buying, Bonnie, on red days, right? I've been buying the odd bits and pieces here and there over the past 3 or 4 weeks, over 3 months. And I'm thinking, I never thought this stock would get to this price. Let me just start a little entry there.
Yeah.
I'm going to interject at this point and just say something, because Pete and I had a discussion on the last podcast, and I mentioned that I bought Boohoo, right? And ordinarily, when I disclose a stock, I put a contract note out, right? So I put the contract note out on Twitter, and I normally just blank everything out so no one can see the details other than the price and the date, so it's confirmed that's when I bought it. On this one, I'd left the quantity out so that people see, actually, I've been saying all along, I don't think this market's any good. I think it's going to go into recession. All I'm doing here is buying a tiny amount of this stock, just so it's a bookmark, which I call a bookmark. And then I can scale into it and build to the size that I want. So I bought 1,000, boohoo, nominal amount, £700. That particular tweet went almost viral. When I looked at the notifications and analysis on it, it was like, boohoo, why is he buying it? And then all these people jumping on my timeline going, that's only £700, mate. Why are you even bothering? And I'm trying to explain on here now why I'd only bought £700 worth, right? And that's not my normal size of buying stocks. Otherwise, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing right now, right? So the £700 is a bookmark. What is a bookmark? The bookmark is for me to get, like you, Vonnie, now, notifications on Boohoo. And I'm watching the stock and I've got my metrics in place now so that over the next year and a bit or a year, when they start to do whatever they're doing incrementally, I'll add and I'll add and I'll add. And if it doesn't get to the point where I can add, I'll wait. Yeah. And if it doesn't actually grow and things go pear-shaped, I may never go beyond that £700 worth of investment. But if it goes to where I want it to go, yeah, over the next year and a half or so, and the share price gets to about, it would be about £1.50, so double the amount I've paid for it, I'd already have 50 or 100,000 stock shares of Boohoo where I have finished. Yeah. But people don't understand that, which is why I very rarely put the quantities down. And it's very rare that I'm buying at the very base of the markets when I think, actually, I think we're going to a recession and the markets could go lower. Mm-hmm. Because when I lump in into a stock, I lump into a stock. But I haven't done that with Boohoo. And over the past 2 weeks, it's gone from sub 70 or just about 70 pence. I think it's gone to about 83. And today it's dropped back a little bit. Who knows where it's going to go?
I mean, at the end of the day, that is the theory of averaging down, right?
Regarding averaging up. I know lots of people that are sitting on Twitter right now who are down six figures on Boohoo. Right, I know one person's down about £300,000 on Boohoo.
So you are? Right?
No, I'm down quite a lot of it.
Oh man!
Yeah, but this is what I'm saying. So I'm scaling. So the people were rejoicing when it was at £2, £3, or £4, and saying it's going to go higher. And unfortunately, the market's not done that as yet. Yeah, but if you've got 100,000 shares at £4 a piece or £2 a piece, that's a lot of money. So if I get to the stage where I've got 100,000 shares in Boohoo and it gets back to £4. Then happy days. But a lot of people are going to be at break even at £2, £3, and £4.
Mm-hmm. I just say, on Boohoo, my actual entry price is about 44p. So I'm actually up on my entry price. But the point is, it went up to like 400p. I could see it was pulling back. I didn't think it would pull back this far. I've got caught on it, but that's life. I'm still quite happy to stick with it. You were saying about buying a, you know, like, I can't remember the word you used, Pete, but I call it like a placeholder. And I've done the same.
A bookmark.
A bookmark. I've done the same with Sofion, S-P-E, which had some news today about a little acquisition they've done. I've got about 1% of my portfolio in it. So not a huge amount, but I really like the business. I think it's something that could be really good in the future. Problem is, the valuation is nuts. It's on like forward PE of 80. So it's just too highly valued for me to really pile into it. But, you know, I've got my placeholder. It keeps me interested in it. It keeps me, because the trouble is, if I don't do a placeholder, I get distracted and I buy something else and I forget all about it. And So I find the whole idea of a placeholder, and then as the story develops, yeah, you can be averaging down. If it drops a bit and you start to like it more, but you get an opportunity to buy less, you can average down. Or if you like it and it's going up and you buy at a higher price, you know, you're averaging up. But the point is, you're getting more confident with the story.
Yeah, I actually agree with that, because if you don't have a bookmark or a placeholder, you lose interest, or sometimes you just forget about it. Sometimes you just actually just forget and think, oh, there's something else to watch. And the worst feeling, and, you know, as much as we talk about, you know, you need to take emotions out of investing, you know, you must keep a level-headed, rational mind. We are human beings. We are emotional beings. And the worst feeling is the feeling that you've missed, isn't it? FOMO. Oh, my God. I should have just put my foot in ever so slightly. Because if it does go, you know, skyrocketing off, listen, 1,000 is 1,000. Better than zero, right? So I've always thought that. And this kind of cycles back to what I said earlier about the feeling of feeling small.
Whether you are an experienced or new investor, you know how valuable it is to conduct portfolio enhancing analysis and to have easy access to data that will give you the edge. As a Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener, you can access an exceptional offer via ShareePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. This special Twin Peaks offer is available to new subscribers only, and you can subscribe using the promo code TWINPEETS. The incredible and exclusive offer means that monthly subscribers will get their second month free, and annual subscribers will get their 13th month free. Sign up and subscribe to ShareePad today using the Twin Peaks promo code, and you can save up to £69. Visit sharescope.co.uk/sharepad for further details and subscribe to the investing and trading analysis and data you need.
Unfortunately, we do have a lot of individuals on Twitter that will only come on your timeline when they want to say something negative or they want to have a pop. And obviously I've done quite well over the past 30 years of investing. And it's the reason why I'm free to do what I want to do now. But it doesn't stop me doing things the way that I want to do it. My timeline's my timeline. Pete, last year now, he said, right, that's it, I'm done. I'm going to block these people now. I'm going to block them. I was like, whoa. I practice mindfulness. We've spoken about meditation, Bonnie, when we met before and all the rest of it, and about having a peaceful life. I don't need a lot of noise and traffic on my timeline of people being aggressive, passive aggressive, rude. So I've adopted that now. I'm going down Pete's track. I'm going, I'm done now. If you're going to come on my timeline, you want to say something positive and you want to contribute and add some value, fine. Don't even have to follow me. Fine. Just add what you want. If you're going to come on and being rude, I'm just going to block you. I'm going to move on. You're not adding any value, just having a pop. You don't understand what I'm doing, but you're having a pop. Bye-bye.
Do you know what?
We're doing the podcast. Pete's doing his blogs. I'm doing the Investing Matters podcast to educate other people as well. I'm contributing as much as I possibly can. I'm putting out my contract notes, which very few people do for whatever reasons, right? And they're choosing to have a pop. I'm like, really? Put out your contract notes. Stop having a pop. Be kind to people. Have a think about people's mental health, and have a think about how much kindness you could share and generate by doing something for some other people freely. Simple as.
But something else as well, that if you take the kind of the personal, you know, kind of, you know, sometimes you feel like the trolls are just on you. Investing, I have found through talking to people and just, you know, asking questions, is a very personal thing. And everyone has their own style. Whether it's you adding, you know, however many bookmarks you want, actually, it's none of their business if at the end of the day, it gets you to where you need to get to. And it is, everyone has their style. So, you know, we could talk about my style of investing, which is the minute I see something I like, I don't read that much into it, I just like it, I will have my bookmark. But what I do is I trade around that zone. So I have a core, which I don't really even care when I enter. I just feel like I just want to own it. But then what I do, I'll take my technical analysis and I'll trade around that core, up or down. I don't care. I just find it fun. Someone might make fun of mine. Someone might be making fun of that and think, oh, how reckless, how, you know, risk on. What business is of yours? I make money from it. You know?
Yeah, at the end of the day, Bonnie, it's your money. I mean, we try and gauge it on here. And we're trying to educate people to take low risk strategies and all the rest of it. But at the end of the day, it's your money to do with what you wish.
But it's,
you know, it's your Twitter handle to do with what you wish.
I find it stimulating. I enjoy, I enjoy having that core holding and knowing that I'm, you know, I'm invested in this business to do well. But I also enjoy the playing of, you know, news pushing it up and then pushing it back down and, you know, getting more skilled, I suppose, at my technical analysis, which sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But it's whatever you feel keeps you in the game.
Okay, let's talk about your dividend portfolio now, your lower risk element of it. How you've chosen the stocks, some of the stocks you've chosen, and what are you looking for as metrics to say, this is a dividend stock, now it's going into that compartment and staying there. Hopefully you're not trading around those, but, you know, tell us about that.
No, that one's very quiet. So all I've done, and it's quite simple, really, I went on Google and I searched highest paying dividend stocks worldwide. So I own a, I wish I prepared for this now, a Brazilian telecoms company.
Okay.
Which, let me get it up.
Don't tell me it's called Braztel or something.
No.
Braziltel.
Have we got time for this?
Yeah, we got time
for it. We have. We can come back to it. Tell us about some of the other ones.
I have oil stocks in my dividend portfolio.
Are there any of those UK ones?
Say it again.
Are any of those UK ones or are there overseas as well?
They're BP.
Yeah, BP, yeah.
Did you choose BP?
It's okay, but we'll move on from the Brazilian one. Tell us about BP and how you selected that one.
How did I select them? Well, just off the dividend, really. And then, I've had that a while, but then obviously since Russia, I was a little bit worried, firstly, on what's happening and, you know, them selling off their part, et cetera, et cetera. But they seem to have resolved that. That seemed to have been okay. So I think that was lucky. What else is in? I have Apple in my stock as well. And that was since the March 2020 crash.
Okay, when the dividend was actually a little bit more than it is now, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty tiny now. Who else is in there? I've got GSK in there.
GSK, yeah. I think Pete and I both hold that, I think.
Yeah. So I'm dying here. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You're right there, Pete.
I feel I've survived.
So GSK. So how long ago did you buy GSK?
I've had, you know, a lot of my opportunity came in that March 2020, February 22.
How did you purchase those? Because you had cash available to do so.
I did. And I've got Tesla to thank for that.
Tell us about your Tesla story then, because everyone loves a good Tesla story.
Oh,
go on.
God. So
start, the middle, and the end. Go on.
Everyone thought I was mad because my Tesla...
Some people still do, Bonnie.
My Tesla and Bitcoin relationship was... like almost hand in hand. And at the time, it was quite gung-ho because I thought to myself, I've got nothing to lose, really, because the amounts at the time were nominal. And I was just following a trend, right? And I was still learning, didn't really know what I was doing. And it really was the right place, the right asset, the right connections at the right time. Because I think without those two, I wouldn't have had anything to invest, really. Because if you looked at it in terms of, you know, what it is, valuation, forward, it was off the charts. You know, they're both mental. But at the time, I just...
Fundamentals were out the window. Yes, exactly. Yeah.
But at the time, I thought to myself, I'm just going to ride this wave until, you know, it ends. And then when it ends... it ends. But then what happened with Tesla was I got in low enough for it to when it eventually went back to my, almost to my initial entry in March 2020, I thought, I still really like the stock. You know, I'm a fan of Elon Musk for the work that he does in space, or for our, you know, ongoing journey to space. I'm going to put a little bit more in. And I kind of kept on believing that Tesla will come out fine. I don't know whether there was some kind of, it was probably just madness. It was just madness because at that time, everyone wanted out, didn't they? It was sell. But I was averaging down on it and riding it all the way. And I only just recently sold my last bit of Tesla.
You mean averaging up from the March low, Bon, there?
Yeah, I was averaging down from February to March.
Oh, averaging down, yeah.
But then I had already owned some from before. So it was a wild ride. But I think because I had increments, it never felt like a massive amount. It was just like, it's just a little bit here.
It almost felt like
a savings account, really. Just, you know, a bit here, a bit there. So I was very, very lucky with it. And I have Tesla to thank for what now is a more stable investment portfolio. You know, where I have more funds now to be able to say, right, okay, here is my dividend portfolio, and you know, here's my spec stuff. Right, I've got it open now. So I have got in there, this one's a bit naughty, Imperial Brands.
Yep.
I've got Telecom Plus.
That's one of Pete's, yeah, I'll be happy with that. Yeah.
I've got Pennon for water.
Yep.
Vodafone.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. Yeah, BP, FSFL.
So Google did you proud there, really. You know, cut to the quick. Google, tell me.
Having the money, like Alexa, in bank.
Tell me the best dividend paying stocks in the world. There you go. There's 12. Bingo. Dosh. Gone.
Well, because that money was sitting there.
Yeah, but it's the redistribution. Bitcoin, Tesla, and now you're redistributing it and lowering your risk and putting it into dividend paying stocks. Great strategy.
Because brilliant. I thought to myself, the worst thing that can happen now is I take my profits from Bitcoin and Tesla and give it all back because I don't know what I'm doing. And that would have been horrendous because here is my opportunity to do something with it. And not knowing exactly what I'm doing because I am learning, but as I'm learning, there's no point sitting in a 0.01% savings account.
Absolutely.
Buy some dividend, you know, good dividend growth companies, not you know, obscure ones, some good solid ones that have, you can look back 5, 6, 5, 7, 10 years, have they kept up with their div payments, what industry that they're in. These are safe enough, I know nothing safe, but safe enough for me.
Bon, do you have a sense of what kind of return you want from your income portfolio every year?
Yeah, I'm happy.
Go on.
I'm happy with about 7%.
Yeah, well, that's where I am on mine. I'm sort of looking for 7-8% a year. I think that's realistic on a nice, boring, safe income portfolio. But I've really discovered since running mine, and I've been running mine for probably 9 years now, or so 8 or 9 years, I've found it really diversifies my portfolio well. So, for instance, this year, my normal portfolio is having a tough year and not doing very well at all. But my income portfolio is actually up quite nicely on the year. And psychologically, that really helps. You know, it's all diversification and spreading risk. And sometimes particular strategies do well, other times other strategies do well. And it just so happens at the moment that income is a strategy that's doing pretty well at the moment.
Absolutely. Yeah. We're in a situation, I've just popped it on my phone now, and the markets, as we're saying on the Investing Matters podcast with John Stepek, which I recommend everyone to go and have a listen to, because he is the executive editor of Money Week, is absolutely phenomenal. And he's got a fantastic book as well that I would recommend people go and actually have a listen to and a read depending on how they like to digest their books. But the Dow Jones is currently down 3.3%. So that's a massive move today. S&P 500 is down 3.7/3.8%. And the NASDAQ is down 4.4%. So absolute carnage today on those particular markets. So lots of stocks are going to be impacted tomorrow. The FTSE closed down 1%. The DAX closed down 1.26%. So tomorrow, I think there's going to be a follow through on that regarding some stocks. Some of the ones I've recently been buying probably going to get smashed again, but I'm building a position in those.
This is
I think Wednesday, the interesting thing will be.
We just say this is Wednesday, the 18th of May, and we're recording this. We started recording about six.
It's 7:08 p.m. at the moment in the UK, and that's what's going on with the Dow. Sometimes it pings back, but I don't think we're going to undo a 3% move on the Dow Jones. You know, even if the plunge protection team get their act together, I don't think they're going to do that in the next hour or so. So some people have been saying, you know, that's it, the bottom's in with regards to the stock market. I don't agree. I've been saying and calling this wrongly since October, November time, that the market's going to go lower, and I don't mind being wrong. Like a stop clock at some point or other, it's going to hit my time and I'm going to be right or I'm going to be wrong again. But I'm just being cautious. And on that note, probably the biggest news I'm going to share with people is that given the fact I've held AstraZeneca since 1994, we're now sitting here in the 28th year of me holding that stock, and it's compounded ridiculously for me. And on the 5th and the 17th of this month, I've trimmed some AstraZeneca for a very, very ever first time. Why? Because it was up over 20% year to date. Additionally, it's now up 20-fold for me since 1994. And I just thought, I'm telling everyone else that I'm trimming all these other stocks. I'm sitting here with more than half the weighting of my whole entire invested wealth in the stock market sitting in AstraZeneca. I've got to take some off if I'm that worried about the market. So I've finally done that. It took me a bit, talk about emotions. It was almost like sending one of my kids to private school and the other one to the estate school. It felt like that. You know what I mean? So it was hard, but I did it. And I'm feeling a little bit like that now because I'm thinking, actually, you did something there that you said that, you know, was hard. And I think the hardest thing to do and the best thing to do is when you're, and I said this to Pete many times and Pete said it back to me, when you're in the position where something has done well for you, instead of tapping yourself on the back and congratulating yourself, take some stuff off the table. And I've been trying my level best over the past few years to nudge myself over that get rid of some AstraZeneca stocks. And I've never done it. And I am concerned about the market. I could prove to be completely wrong. And in the next couple of weeks and couple of months, AstraZeneca goes significantly higher. But I've still got some stocks in of AstraZeneca in the game. And I've still got a big wedge of it. So now I'm going to carry on redistributing that elsewhere in lower risk stocks or lower undervalued stocks rather than, you know, having it all in AstraZeneca. So we'll see what happens. I don't like holding cash of this significance in my portfolio, but where the market's going to go, I haven't got a Scooby-Doo. So that's what I've done.
This is the game. It's not about we'll see in the future whether this decision was right or wrong. It's about for now. And, you know, for the longevity of our investing career, it's about preserving the capital that you've earned. And I've really learned that because the amount of times I've decided, oh, OK, maybe that was a bit of a mistake. And then it's just gone off the way that was right. It doesn't matter. It'll take off with or without you. So it's not about being right. Actually, I made a decision because I was nervous or I hadn't read something or I just felt like, no, actually, I've changed my mind. I'm going to preserve that capital and the market will give me another opportunity to invest in something that perhaps I feel more settled about, that I feel, you know, this would be a much better option. It's you know, OK, maybe AstraZeneca may go shooting off without you and you're like, oh, man, I held it for so long. Why did I shouldn't have messed about with it. Should have just gone on my holiday. But actually, perhaps there's another opportunity knocking on your door that's you know, that's going to allow you even better returns because you've freed up that cash. We don't know. It's not about being right or wrong, right?
I've still got a lot of AstraZeneca, so we'll wait and see. Yeah. But it feels nice to actually take a little bit off the table. And, you know, the difficulty I've got now is that, you know, the big boss has got is like that going, you know, she wants to spend it, Bonnie, you know what I mean? So we'll wait and see what happens with that. It's sitting in the ISA account, and I'm like, you know, change the password on it, sort of thing. You know,
it's something that I've really learned through trading, because I don't know if you find, because I know Pete Wheely, that you also do some trading, some hedging, but I find that there's been crossover in education, you know, because at the end of the day, trading should be level to level, you know. You don't care which direction it goes. Some people use it to hedge. Some people use it to make money, whatever. But it does teach you to really take a look at yourself and say to yourself, okay, I don't need to be right or wrong. I just want to make sure that I am either protecting a portfolio or I'm doing something that I find at this moment in time is going to preserve that capital. So people who are seeing, you know, their portfolios bleed month on month, I found that with trading, that took off that pain a little bit. It may not have completely covered what was bleeding, but I'd improved my skills. I got, in fact, more interested in an index or a particular stock by doing it. And technical analysis does have a place in investing, you know, great for entries and actually sometimes quite good for exits as well.
Absolutely, yeah.
Absolutely, you're spot on. I spoke with Edmund Shing. Sorry, Pete. I spoke with Edmund Shing on the Investing Matters podcast recently, and he's worked in the industry for 30 odd years, maybe just slightly less, and he's over at BNP Paribas. And what does he do? He uses fundamentals and a touch of technicals regarding his investments. Now, lots of people on Twitter, for a variety of different reasons, completely poo-poo technicals, much to the detriment of their portfolios, no doubt, on occasions. And we've got our good friend, Jason Stelserv, who has made a living from using technical analysis. He doesn't really use a lot of fundamentals. He does his reading regarding the technicals, and he knows when to go in, he knows when to add, knows when to de-risk, position size accordingly, and that's all he does. The chart says, and you might find out later on that was Tesco's, but its fundamentals has come up as this is the stock to buy. And then the name comes up second almost. You know,
I think, I think it adds to your skill.
Absolutely agree. Absolutely agree. Sorry, Pete, go on.
Well, I was going to add something sort of more about what I'm picking up from Bonnie through the conversation. And that's that I'm quite impressed, B, at how you're very good at analysing yourself. And I think this is something where so many investors, and particularly newer investors, are not very good at. I think self-analysis, it's sort of being self-critical, but don't be too critical because you'll end up hurting yourself. So it's not a good idea to be overly critical of yourself, but just being objective and realistic and sort of thinking in a humble way, not being overconfident. That's one of the things. I mean, I saw it so much in the last few years when the markets were booming, that overconfidence was just off the scale, you know, and I think people need to be really wary of overconfidence because it's one of the most dangerous things. And if you're going to be protecting your capital, avoiding crashing the plane, you know, You can't afford to be overconfident, and you've got to be confident in that you can place trades and whatever. You know, you mustn't be scared to go long. You mustn't be scared to buy a stock, but equally, you mustn't be so gung-ho that you're just taking balmy risks and you're just going to end up getting your capital destroyed. So I really like the way you're being really sort of, you know, self-analysis, really.
Oh,
reflective.
Thank you. It's thank important. You for saying that. I mean, there are times when I'm, you know, on Twitter and I'm like, oh my God, How has he made 2,000% in one day? You know, that's £70,000. That's just the most insane amount of money, you know, because a lot of these traders do. But I also bet they lose that amount too, and you don't hear about it because
they don't tell you about that one. Yeah,
because they go to
talk about the losers, Bonnie, and 50% of women will just be making it up as well.
I'm just like, that's ridiculous. I mean, for me, I couldn't even sit through a trade with that kind of size, but you know, let alone even imagining getting that type of a win. But I'm not interested in that. For me, I'm not saying this is not about the money. Of course, the money is almost like a byproduct of something you do well, like our work as well. You know, if you're good at what you do, you get paid for it, and you know, that's how you're rewarded. I do see investing a little bit like that. I'm genuinely interested in what's happening in the market. You know, I bore my friends to tears about the stuff that I talk about because I don't really have peers that are interested in the same type of things. You know, I'm a typical woman in lots of senses, but I don't talk about fashion or, you know, just all the gossip. And I wouldn't know a celebrity if they walked right past, you know, Leicester football players. I wouldn't know who they were. I have no interest whatsoever. But talk to me about how a company's doing or which company's up and coming or who's setting up business. I'm like, you know, all ears in terms of that. So I think you're right, Pete. You do have to know yourself, because if you think you can, and it's the staying in this game, because, you know, you might do well 1 or 2 years and then get distracted, get bored, or you've made your money and thought, okay, that's it for me. I'll just put it in a passive fund and just let someone deal with it. That's great. That's also great, because that's also knowing yourself. But I think to really like be interested and to ask questions and to actually think about almost like the market in a holistic way, I find it day to day really interesting. I could talk about it, you know, to anyone all day long till the cows come home. Doesn't bore me one bit. But it is making that start, and it is if anyone's listening, thinking, yeah, I am like that, but I just don't know where to begin. Do you know what? Just open a platform where you can buy some fractional shares. And just get in there and just muck in.
This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with ShareePad from ShareScoop, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScoop.co.uk and discover the advantage.
You mentioned fractional shares earlier. Can you just explain simply what that is, what that means for our listeners?
So basically, if you like a piece of Apple, but you don't have, and how much is Apple now? $150 to buy one share. You can buy part of that Apple share, or Amazon, which is at, what is it, 4,000? I don't know how much is an Amazon share, $4,000 or something like that a share?
I don't know either, but it's way up there. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, something
so
like that.
Whatever the large amount is, you can buy a fraction.
Exactly. You know, if you only have, you can buy 50, you can open an account with £50 that perhaps, you know, if you decide that you have the spare cash to put in that £50 every month, direct debit to your investment portfolio, that's enough. You can buy, you know, bits and pieces of shares, and it allows you to bookmark and have that placeholder so that you're interested. To keep you interested, you know, I've got a bit of Tesco. I've got a bit of, you know, whatever, whoever. I'm just going to start learning more about it. What business is it doing? Is it opening up anywhere else in the world? You know, oh, they're using a different delivery company. They're saving money there. Oh, they've changed their CEO. That person came from Walmart, whatever. Because you've got a little bit of that share, you just have skin in the game, which makes you more interested. When you don't, life takes over. You know, it's your mum's birthday, it's my daughter's this, and your anniversary. Then suddenly you're like, oh, I don't know what's happening with this share. I've got no skin in the game. I'm still out of it. And I feel like I'm constantly missing out. And this whole idea of financial freedom and financial independence is never available to you because you never make that first step because you think you need loads of money. But that's just simply not true.
So what brokers, what platforms do this fractional ownership?
So you have one called Free Trade, which is wrapped under an ISA.
Yeah.
You save money there as well. And I'm pretty sure there's a lot of others exactly like it, just under different names.
So just look up fractional ownership on Google or something and it'll tell
you. Yeah, it will just bring it up. I mean, eToro is one that's not under an ISA. There's one called Nutmeg. I'm not sure whether you can directly buy. I mean, even people like Barclays, you know, they're not the best, but everyone knows Barclays Bank.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure they have, you can open an account and buy fraction shares through.
I got a feeling Interactive Investor might do it, but I might be wrong. But
I think so. I mean, yeah, it's literally as simple as opening a Google and going, you know, fractional share account and
brilliant.
All will come up.
You touched on financial freedom. So we've been on this now for over an hour. I want to touch on this segment, if I may, about the financial freedom aspect of it. You've got two children. You've got your aspirations as to what you want to do. Like everybody else, you don't want to work forever. So what are your goals regarding career and investment wise in the sense of, you know, your goals towards financial freedom? What are those?
Okay, so financial freedom for me, and it could be different for everyone else, is the idea that the money, the income that I have allows me to live the type of lifestyle that I want to a reasonable extent, you know, to what I feel like is a rich life, if you know what I mean, one that's balanced. I've achieved that really because I love my work. I don't think I'll ever give up my work because I truly, genuinely love my job and love what I do. And I think without that component of me, I wouldn't know a lot about what I invest in now, which is, you know, I'm watching vertical farming companies, how they're moving, which companies are doing what. I haven't invested in one yet because I still think a lot of them are still trying to work its way out around the machinery, the technology, the type of hydroponics. But that's a sector that I'm really focusing on for the future because I think within large urbanizations across the world, you're talking London, New York, Singapore, you know, you name all the big cities, there will eventually be this demand for green food, fresh food and fruit immediately, which is where these kind of farms come. And I would never have found this out without my work because it was my work, my job that introduced me to this, you know, this amazing, you know, science that's happening in the background. So for me, I don't think I'm ever, I hope I don't need to retire because I don't feel like I work in that sense because I genuinely enjoy my work. But then it really does tie in into the things that I find interesting. And I get a lot of my information from there. Not so much insider information because I know that's very legal. But you know what I mean?
We know what you mean, Bonnie.
You certainly wouldn't say it on the podcast.
Yeah. Primary research, Bonnie. Primary research, mate.
Primary
you're in
research.
Different countries, exactly. You're seeing what's going on, you're seeing different products. Some, you know, with your work, you see the products first time as well before everyone else is seeing them sometimes, you know?
That's right. That's right. And I ask the questions and it's just like, it's, you know, genomes sequencing was in vegetables, was what led me to look at biotech companies, you know, who's working on what type of technology to heal what type of illness to enable, you know, so there is so much crossover. But yeah, I mean, obviously, if I get another run of a Bitcoin Tesla, you know, would it be able to retire me because I'm more comfortable with size and positioning? I know a little bit more about what I'm doing now. I don't know. I don't know whether it'll ever come to that. But then my focus has never really been about the figure. It's never been like, right, this year I want to hit six figures or seven figures. I'm kind of not interested in that. I just want to see my percentage returns increase like a company, really. I try to look at it as a business. And I want to see my losses in terms of commissions or just bad trades, you know, bad investment ideas go down.
Yeah.
And then I'm happy. That's where I want to see it.
Well, I think that relaxed attitude.
This thing about measuring portfolio performance in terms of percentage is just so important. And especially when you're starting out and if you're You know, if someone was starting out on fractional shares with just say £10,000, it's like, it's about the learning process and getting in the habit of making the percentage returns. And if you're consistently able to make good returns, and if you're controlling your costs and all that kind of stuff, then it puts you in good stead for the future. If you obsess about the money all the time, it's just going to blow your brain. And the thing is, as your portfolio grows, if you're thinking in pound notes terms, it starts to get a bit scary, because in a day, your portfolio can get smashed. You know, if you've got enough money, your portfolio could get smashed 20,000 quid in a day. And you might go, oh my God, that's terrible, 20,000 quid, when it might only be like 0.8% of your portfolio. So it's absolutely nothing, you know. And I think, okay, that's just an extreme example, but it's like, it definitely helps to think in percentage terms.
Something that I started to do as well, and I think I've probably been doing it a couple of years now, just again, it's just to almost like keep my head in the game to focus on something in terms of my own improvement, is that at the beginning of either every quarter or every half, I would just list three things that I want to improve on, just to keep it nice and simple. And it could be, so this quarter, I was like, right, I do want to start getting more dynamic with my position sizing. Because before, it used to be just all the same position size. So now that I'm a little bit more experienced, I want to try and improve on that. And I'll review in 6 months how I've improved on my position sizing and with what type of stock and why, you know, just to focus on that. So that's like one area. And then I thought to myself, okay, I can probably do two in the next 6 months. I want to really start to hone down much, much better on my risk to reward. You know, how are people getting the 1 to 5s, the 1 to 10s? Because I'm only getting 1 to 2, 1 to 3 at best. So I really want to start getting more, you know, better with my asymmetrical risk, really push and try and really research assets that I think could give me a 5, a 10 return to the 1 risk, which I hadn't done before because I'd never been that sophisticated before. So it's kind of like, it's just this ongoing journey of improvement and going, okay, so I got this return, you know, last year at 12%, say. In order for me to get from 12% to say 18%, I've got to do these little tweaks without adding risk, without adding too much risk, because here's areas that I can improve on, that if I could just get this right, would add that extra 6% to my portfolio. Without, you know, without going, like you said, all gung-ho with like, right, going all in on this really massive, crazy speculative growth thing. Mm-hmm. And one thing that I found that I do struggle with is the patience to wait for whatever you're watching to hit a level that you feel, here's my entry. Oh, my God. That's a killer. That is a killer.
Vonnie, you are 50-odd years away from being the same age as Munger and Buffett. Right, they've gotten to where they've gotten to by doing exactly
50,
what you just
you're
said.
Cheeky devil, she's about 70.
Right, they've been very,
it's
very patient.
It's my birthday on Saturday.
Oh wow!
They've been very patient, right? They've taken the time to carry on trying to improve for the last 80 odd years, right? You've got 60 or 50 or whatever years to get to where they are now in age rise, and if you carry on with the attitude that you've got now, you're going to absolutely smash it, because it's all about Kaizen and incremental improvements and the quest and the willingness to carry on learning. There are far too many people out there that you're going to find that already know everything there is to know. And they're in the 20s, the 30s, the 40s, the 50s, and they've got nothing to learn from anybody because they know it all already. You know, we'll see what happens to some of those over the next 2 or 3 weeks and 2 or 3 years regarding the markets, because everyone is going to get taught a lesson, including myself. I don't know it all. Buffett doesn't know it all. Pete doesn't know it all. You know, John Stepek, you know, Edmund Ching, who I've just recently interviewed, you know, Matt Dampier, they don't know it all. Algie Hall, don't know it all. You know, we're all learning. And the fact that you're saying, I want to improve that, I want to tweak that, I want to do that, that's exactly how you should be. You know, and more of us need to be able to say that and reflect and go, I can improve this, I can get better. Because they're complaining, and we've all complained in the past about the platform we're using has raised the charges by £1.50 or £2.50 or whatever. How would your portfolio perform if you incrementally improved your performance by that 0.1% over the next 10 years across all stocks you hold and across the whole portfolio compounded over 25 years? I would say it's quite significant. So we shouldn't worry about the costs, should worry about tweaking, improving, and in getting our performance that tad better. So I love what you've just said there. Right, I'm conscious of the time, so I'm going to give Pete the opportunity to talk about one stock, and then we're going to finish with you, Vonnie, if possible.
Okay, well, I'm actually going to talk my own book, which is a bit naughty, but
well, there's a surprise. There's a surprise, Pete.
I'm going to do it. Today, one of my portfolio holdings had an update, and that was Vistry, VTY, the house builder. And if you look at the share price graph on Vistry, it's bloody awful. It's just gone down for a year, basically. And from memory, it's on like a forward PE of about 5.5, but then all house builders are on low multiples and should be on low multiples because they're very cyclical. It's paying a dividend yield. You have to check this, but I think it's at least 7%. It's a really chunky forward dividend yield. They are going to be the top end of expectations. Their average monthly debt is going to be better than expected. Their forward order book is really good. They've had a really strong start to the year. It's really interesting because, you know, I think it's very easy with the climate and with the environment, with the economic climate, the economic environment being so bad, it's really easy to just write off house builders and say, oh, they're all doomed. And obviously they've had that hit from the cladding scandal where they've had to make, you know, they've had to put more provisions for that. But I wonder if these house builders have been overspanked. I mean, it's in a downtrend now, so there's no point buying it when it's in a downtrend. So you can probably buy it even lower than it is now. But at some point, these are going to turn out to be fantastic investments. And I think the thing is with it as well is that the housing market is sort of changing because you've got loads of pension companies and bigger investors buying, you know, effectively building blocks and blocks of housing so they can rent it out. And there was news today from Legal & General, LGEN, that they're putting £4 billion into the sort of Birmingham area to build housing where obviously they can invest for the long term. And they'll use this, they'll use the income stream from the rental to pay pension payments over the next 25, 30, 40 years. And, you know, simple fact is immigration is not being controlled, despite whatever the government says about that. We've got more and more people living on their own. We've got a massive housing shortage problem. I think we're going to see more of this sort of partnership type stuff. And Vistry do a lot of that. And most of the house builders now have got like a partnerships division. So I think it's just really interesting stuff.
Yep. It's an interesting one, mate. I've nibbled at something in that space. I'm not going to say what it is. I will pull you up, though, on the fact you've touched on the fact that we need more housing because of immigration. I completely disagree with that, Pete. We need more housing because we need more housing, full stop. And there's more people actually living longer. So that's another reason why we need housing. Vonnie, do you want to finish off, mate? Do you want to say anything? Words of wisdom? I'll tell you what I will do. I will ask you one question, okay? And I'm going to pluck this question out of the air. With regards to your investing, yeah, and the fact that you started in 2017 in crypto and then moved in 2019 into stocks and shares, even going back 5 years ago, what is the one thing that's happened to you, the light bulb moment when you've gone, I get what this investing lark's now about? What was that?
Oh, patience, which I really lack. Yeah, I mean, there have been times where I've pulled my hair out going, why didn't I just wait a little bit longer? And I'm talking to buy and to sell. Both. because there were times when I sold too soon off, you know, some bad news or something like that. And it was just like, oh, I should have, you know, had my conviction. Actually, it was something that I did research, something that I did know, that I did have conviction in, but I didn't have the experience in holding through something bad. I didn't know how to add into a position if the fundamentals of a company were still sound. And I just thought, I'm out. So, you know, that required some fortitude and patience. And the other way as well, you know, buying too soon and seeing it tank and you're like, oh my God, now it's too late to come out. You know, all these conversations you have in your own head. And, you know, my kids are wondering why I'm in a bad mood that day.
Bonnie, the thing is, right, Pete, myself, the fund managers that everyone loves out there, right? You know, you've got SMT that everyone loves, yeah? You've got Linson Train that everyone loves. You've got Pershing that everyone loves. They've all made huge mistakes. Everyone makes huge mistakes in the market. Buffett's made huge mistakes in the past himself, you know? And it's those mistakes that are the biggest foundations of your learning, because then that enables you to go, right, okay, that's not going to happen to me again, or less so going forward. And we learn far more from our mistakes, Bonnie. And yeah. Pete and I have made scores of them. Hence the reason why we're both bald at the moment.
I missed my hair as well. Because
we had hair at one stage.
Oh, I agree with you. And now I think I have set up this alert system for that reason now, because I'm done pulling my hair out going, why, you know, why am I watching the screen? Go and get on with my life. Because if I didn't watch the screen, I wouldn't have seen FTSE go up 200 points, down 200 points, because it ended up as a doji exactly where it started. But there I am panicking about something that I'm owning and the FTSE going, ah, it's a time to sell. Oh, no, yeah, I've missed it. Yeah. I could have had a really nice day.
Yeah.
And just come back to exactly where I started, right? But no, I mean, instead I'm there putting my... So just to have that patience with myself and with the stock, you know, to maybe to allow it some breathing time. There's been some news, there's been a new CEO, something that I like, or somebody that I like, and I believe in, because, you know, maybe it's, I mean, I do like female CEOs, so whenever I get pinged,
I do as well. They do far better than most of the men CEOs, definitely.
I just think, you know, we should support each other, and you know, if one's kind of pushing through that glass ceiling, I'd like to see where she's going. I'd like to see where she's come from. If I get pinged about something like that, I'll go and start reading and think, oh, okay, she did quite well back there. And I think she's going to make some, you know, good moves there. Something I'm interested in, you know, rather than be chasing, you know, what's moving, what's not moving, and which one's tanked. It just drives you nuts. So that's what I've
learned.
Don't
chase trends. Yeah, don't chase trends so much.
Just be patient with the market. It always gives you an opportunity, because back in the day, I was like watching 30 signals going, oh, is that going to move? Or is this going to move today? I don't have time for that. It was so stressful. So these days alerts ping me and I think, oh, okay, the stock market's open in the US. It's a green day. What's going red? Why is it red? So I do like to be a bit of a contrarian. I like to see it on a green day, what's going red, on a red day, what's going green, just to understand, kind of like, I feel like I can see the money flowing in and out. It's going out there, going into that sector. Why? You know, then it's, something's happened now. It's flowing out of that sector into that sector. Why?
Sector rotation.
I'm going to call it a wrap there. Vonnie, it's been absolutely brilliant to have you on. I will be inviting you to another Memphis do in Leicester at some point or other, so we'll be able to catch up for a drink.
Thank
I'll hopefully you. Introduce you to my two bosses as well. I know you met my good friend Suze last time, so we'll have to sort that out as well. But yeah, that was Vonnie Leah at Vonnie_Leah_ on Twitter. Please follow her account. Check her portfolio of portfolios out as well regarding all the different investment strategies. And we will see you again in 2 weeks. Pete, thank you ever so much, mate, again. Vonnie, thank you so much.
Thank you,
and
guys.
Thank you to all our listeners. And thank you all again for your fantastic feedback with regards to the last podcast as well. And if you enjoyed this, please share it on Twitter, share it across your social media, and give us the feedback, and follow Vonnie's account. Thank you all very much. Take care. And we will say God bless.
See you. See you later.
This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.